Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Today's quote is from Nayira Wahid. I love listening. It is one of the only places where you can be still and moved at the same time. Welcome to Permission to Speak, the podcast about how we talk and how we get ourselves heard, with me, Samara Bay. This week's guest is Liz Climo. Even if you don't know her name, you probably know her art. Over at the Little Book of Liz on Tumblr and on her Instagram and on coffee tables and classrooms around the world, her cartoons of animals talking to each other against a simple white background speak volumes. I feel like everything about them is both simple and also profound. I wanted to have Liz on because I wanted to talk about the process of being creative during times of insane uncertainty and what the role of laughter and joy and innocence is in wildly unsettling times. And also, you guys, before branching out on her own, Liz worked for over a decade drawing on The Simpsons. And I wanted to know all the goods, first of all, on what that culture is like, and second of all, how she left it all behind. This is Liz. Liz.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Here, in quotes.
Air quotes.
I want to start actually talking about how ideas happen for you. I want to talk about what your process is.
It is, it's one of a couple different things. Either I am really, you know, just going about my business on a walk, doing my thing, just kind of like living my life, and an idea just pops into my head. That's what I want to happen. That's like the best case scenario.
Right.
That's pretty rare. And those are usually the ideas that I end up liking the most.
Ah.
The rest of the time, I'm like staring out the window and just trying to grasp at straws and hope that an idea comes to me. Or I'll go on a walk or I'll just kind of like put myself out into the world and ideas sort of come to me that way. So this has been sort of an interesting time because I don't really do that anymore. I don't really like go out into the world or leave the house a whole lot anymore. So it's a lot of just sort of like taking in information and digesting it and trying to create. Right now, it's a big part of it is just trying to create something with a lot of intention that I feel like people might want to see or need to see. And be really aware of that. Whereas before it was kind of just like, this is goofy. I'll just, you know, here's a funny idea. I'll just kind of, you know, put on paper and or on the computer screen and see how it goes.
Yeah, that's interesting though. So it feels like the intentionality is a new idea that you're trying to sort of rise to the times.
Yes, I feel, because somewhere along the way, like at first, you know, I've been doing comics for quite a few years now, probably like 7 years. I mean, my whole life, really, but I've been actually, like, posting them for, like, 7 years or so.
I was going to say, when did you date that back to?
And, I mean, if I were to go back and look at some of the earlier ones, and I don't do that very often because some of them are real cringy for me to look at, but it was really just trying to, you know, make people laugh. Would this make me laugh? Or is this something that I might have said that made a friend laugh? And how can I have that translate into a comic? But somewhere along the way, I started realizing that the comics I was doing in particular were resonating with people who felt sort of like they aren't seen in the way that they'd like to be seen, or they just feel kind of, you know, or even if you don't feel that way, it just occurred to me that people were responding to it in a really positive way, in a way that made me feel like, not even a responsibility, but just I wanted to create more work like that that made people feel good and made people feel seen. So now that we're in, you know, a legitimate crisis, I really am keeping that, you know, in my mind. And it's like, what could I do? How could I sort of like create something that, even if it doesn't even have to be some huge statement so much as just like, you know, I realize people are scrolling Twitter and scrolling Instagram and seeing my work that way. What could be something that they could pause and sort of just take a breath amongst everything else that's just really, really heavy and hard? And just sort of like kind of collect their thoughts and just have like a nice moment of like a giggle, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about it in those terms because it makes me think about what the role is of humor and joy mm-hmm. in the midst of, you know, like collective trauma.
Yes.
And thinking about what you do in those terms rather than it feeling like, you know, it's frivolous and it's over there and shouldn't deserve the, you know, gravitas of other stuff. Thinking of it as a bomb or as something that, you know, is for these times.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of really, really, I mean, that's an understatement. There's so much beautiful work and so many people saying so many beautiful things and relevant things and important things in art. And I appreciate seeing all that stuff. And I appreciate like having all that stuff out in the world and I consume it. And I'm like so grateful. But then somewhere along the way, I realized that my own stuff, it's something else. It's something lighter, and that's okay. And that sort of like what I realized I was good at, and I just kind of leaned into it. And I'm like, well, let me do more of this because I feel like I can do this in a way that's very subtle and not too heavy-handed. Because the stuff that I tend to like is dark, is much darker than the stuff that I do myself. Like I have like a darker sense of humor, but I don't do that as well. And I don't, you know, just because I might find something funny doesn't mean other people might not find it not funny or offensive. And I don't want to be the person that's creating that stuff. I want to just try to create light if I can, as much as possible.
Tell us specifically about one of the most recent ones, as we record this, at least on your Tumblr, with the snake that says it's fine.
Oh, the one that's saying help?
Yeah.
So that's actually, I mean, that's just me. Where we live, we're really lucky where we live because we have neighbors on every side of us, and we're friends with all of the neighbors. And so we haven't actually like gone over to anyone's houses or had anyone at our houses, or even gone into each other's yards, but we can see into each other's yards and we can, you know, talk and at a safe distance. And my daughter can talk to their kids at a safe distance. But I think it was literally that morning that my neighbor was like, how are you? And I was like, oh, I'm fine. And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, no. And he's like, yeah, me either. It's just like, because that's what we do, you know? And me personally, I try to put on sort of like a happy face. I always have. And I tend to sort of push my feelings down. And sometimes I even have to tell myself like, hey, you need to ask for help right now. You're not okay. Like I'm even telling myself like, oh, you're fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. It'll be okay. Stop worrying. Stop this. And sometimes it's important to recognize when you need to ask for help from somebody. So I was like, oh, how could I convey this in a comic? And so that was the goal of that one.
And tell for people who aren't looking at it, what's the end result?
So I was actually, I started doing, like trying to stick to a schedule on Instagram where on Mondays I post either an old comic or a new comic that I did specifically sort of with the hashtag Monday mood. And it was mostly, it's supposed to sort of convey how I'm feeling that day and ask people how they're feeling. And so this particular one is a bird on a branch and it's asking a snake, I think it's asking, how are you? And the snake's saying fine, but the snake is actually twisting its body into the word help. So it's like, yeah, I'm fine. But obviously it's crying for help. It wants to say how it's actually feeling. And sometimes it's really hard for us to do so, or me anyway. So,
yeah, I honed in on that one because it felt, I mean, you know, it's so deep at the same time as being, you know, silly and sweet.
Well, and, you know, it's hard when you have, I have, you know, again, I have a 6-year-old and, you know, as a parent, it's like, there's just so much I want to, you know, be light and silly and fun. And I want to be a play, because she's an only child. So it's like, I want to be a playmate for her. But I also want to, you know, give her a stable home and give her, you know, I have to feed her and be her teacher and also get this work done. And so a lot of times I have to sort of say to myself, like, hey, it's okay if you're not doing everything perfectly right now, because chances are I'm not doing anything even close to perfectly right now. So cut yourself some slack is sort of the message, and ask for help if you need it.
How do you, in the process part of it, you know, you were talking about where ideas come from, but specifically for people listening who are creatives and who are trying to figure out, even in the before times, but specifically now for people who are stuck at home and maybe do have families and you know, obligations, do you have a set schedule, or how do you get yourself to sit down, or is sitting down even the most, you know, at a consistent time, even the most useful way to be creative?
Yeah, see, it's tough because I'm very type A in a lot of ways, where I do have to sort of give myself a bit of a schedule, because if I don't, I just am as the laziest person you've ever met. Like, if I'm not like cranking out work and trying to get a lot done, then I'm not doing anything. So it's been hard for me to find that balance right now, because that's not possible. So lately the days sort of look like, so my husband's working full time and I technically am, you know, I'm freelancing. So, and I can kind of set my own schedule. So his work, like, he has meetings in the morning and stuff. So I take my daughter, I quote unquote, take my daughter to school, and we do Zoom together. And like, I do her homework with her. And then by the time she's done, it's usually lunchtime. And then I have like a 2 or 3 hour chunk where I try to get everything done. And it's really hard. I actually just wrapped a calendar that I was doing, and I had to do a big chunk of new comics. And so I was trying to get like 3 comics done a day.
Wow.
And I used to be able to, like, my routine was to get up in the morning and go on a walk along. Like, I would take like a 1 or 2 hour walk and just write the entire time and take notes down and like try to find inspiration.
How are you like walking and writing? Like, you mean literally?
With my phone, I would just take notes, or I would like do audio messages, and I would just like, if ideas came to my head. But I can't do that anymore. So I'm trying to like, just if I have an idea, not second guess it, crank it out, and then like kind of revisit it and be like, is this good, or are you just
being, well, that, like, was gonna be, yeah, that's my other part, yeah, of the question, right? Is how do you know what's good, and how do you know what's, and like,
know,
what is bad mean,
I know,
to you?
I actually, I don't know, and it's tough. I have no idea. And then there's the guilt of like, are you just, you know, are you even just producing good work right now? Or are you like, why are you, it's just, it's hard. It's a lot. And if it's any consolation, I feel like I'm doing a terrible job. So I feel like if anyone else out there is like having a hard time, it's just a hard time to be creative, because there's just so much else going on and so many feelings and I say distractions in the most positive way possible, like just seeing friends, going, you know, to the beach and like just being around people and going to barbecues, all that stuff that like where I would find inspiration and I would just find joy is gone. So I'm sort of looking internally a lot more. And that is also, you know, that's also sort of a positive thing as well. It's just very uncomfortable. So.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about how, for me, with my creative projects, I feel like the concept of creativity is so tied up for me in the concept of optimism.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it makes me think of that sort of classic idea that the most optimistic thing you could do is have a child, right?
Yeah.
Because there's like, you're assuming that there's a future that you want them to grow up in. And I think that's the same with like generating, you know, a piece of creative work.
Definitely. And at first, you know, when I set the schedule up for myself on Instagram, where it was like Monday, you know, I tell what mood I'm in, and Wednesday I try to like, you know, I find something that I like that I was positive online during the week, or, you know, what have you. The first month or so, there was a lot of unity. It felt like people were sort of like all on the, you know, everyone was sort of, you know, quote unquote, in this together. And so it felt like there was more room for me to feel like positive and optimistic and like, you know, kind of like cheerleadery. Mm. And then, you know, as time went by, it was harder for me to sort of to do that, because it's like, I don't feel this way anymore. And like, I don't know, there's just a lot of, everything is sort of changing, and I'm trying to sort of continuously give sort of just a hopeful, not an everything's going to be okay message, or like, we're all okay, like not necessarily that, just as, you know, you got through today and good for you for getting through today. That's pretty much it. That's really it. And that's all I want to say.
Yeah.
Like that. And so it's hard to sort of find different ways to do that, but I'm trying.
So there's two places I want to go with that. One is I read somewhere that you're comics are, or your cartoons, what do you call them? What term do you
either
use?
Either one. Both, either, either works.
That they have a quote-unquote innocent silliness. And I wonder if that's connected to this idea that they're, I mean, I also read that you're huge in China. And obviously you're huge in our own country as well. But, you know, this idea of the universality of innocence.
Yeah, I do try to, you know, part of being, trying to be as aware of as possible of like, every different person who may be looking at it, you do sort of have to whittle it down to the most sort of like, I guess, broad idea and
or like foundational, or like a foundational human feeling.
Yeah, so it's not, they're not specific a lot of times, just kind of like a feeling that hopefully everyone can relate to. And I think a lot of times that does lead back to sort of being innocent and silly.
Do you actually think about themes that come up a lot in your work?
You know what I have? I mean, I don't know if I actually really have.
I didn't. It was not a question on my list, but it does feel like when you say that, it is. It makes me. I mean, there's certain characters that show up a lot.
Well, yeah, and you know, I have sort of gone back and forth a lot about, you know, especially earlier on about like, oh, maybe I should give, you know, them names or like create their backgrounds a little bit more, like kind of create stories for them, a little more solid stories for each of them, and I've. Sort of as I've gone forward doing comics, you know, I have projects like books and stuff that I'm working on where I do sort of maybe pick and choose the characters or like create stories for like Rory and his dad, for instance, have like their own sort of little backstory now. But a lot of the other ones I've kind of decided along the way just to keep simple and not put a background, like everything is, they're basically in a void and it's sort of just like they each sort of just represent an emotion or a feeling. So it's not like the characters are really like, you know, there are little personalities here and there that shine through, like the bear and the rabbit are very, you know, they have very like specific personalities. The bear is me and the rabbit's my husband. So that's where those come from.
But coffee.
Yeah. But for the most part, they're not really like characters so much as just like representational of sort of feelings, I think, and things that we might be able to relate to.
And it's not nothing that they're animals.
Yeah. So honestly, part of the reason I draw animals is because I don't really like drawing people that much. And I worked on The Simpsons for so long that when you work on, this is something that's like very true in animation. If you've been working on a show for a long time, it's really hard to break out of the style. So you'll notice that like if a person creates a new show and they have a long history at another show, the new show will look a little like that old show. And it's not that they're not, you know, great artists or that they're not like creative. It's just that it's just really hard to break from that because, you know, you'd learn so much when you're working on a TV show and you're drawing these characters every day. So in part, I was really trying to just get away from The Simpsons as much as possible. As much as I love The Simpsons, I just didn't want, you know, that's why their eyes are dots. And like, I didn't want them to look like Santa's Little Helper, you know, I wanted them to look different. So there's part that, and then there's part, again, just like the universality of like, anyone can relate to like, you know, any one of these characters, because it's just a little bit more broad and it's not like, here is a person who looks just like me. It's like, no, here is a feeling that everybody can probably identify with.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we're going to talk about The Simpsons after the break. But before that, I do want to, specifically, I guess, since you brought it up, tell us how you think about your audience, because obviously some of this is for adults and rings really true for us. And some of it is for kids or is appropriate for kids and is used for kids. Do you think about like kids storytelling, like storytelling for kids and what that is?
You know, I've been thinking about that more lately as I sort of, because I've done.
And especially in contrast to The Simpsons, I mean.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I grew up watching The Simpsons. I know that like, you know, it. I started watching The Simpsons when it came out. I think I was 7 or 8. I was Bart's age when it, so however old Bart is, that's how old I was. And then I watched it all the way through.
But Bart stayed the same age.
Yeah. We're both still 8. But so something about The Simpsons not always having, it's not always necessarily quote unquote child friendly, I guess, but it has such heart. And that is sort of my takeaway. So like, if you look at some of my earlier comic compilations, I would use like bad language in some of them. So like, you know, like for the most part, they're mostly family friendly, but like one of them, I would say like, damn it or something. And without thinking ahead, I mean, I had no idea they were going to be made into a book. I wasn't like really thinking ahead too much, but the language isn't as important to me as like the intention. And now, as I'm, you know, as I have more of an audience and I've put out more books, and it's more clear to me that children will be reading these books, because I do really now want it to be something that everybody can consume and everybody can enjoy on some level. So I purposely don't use bad language anymore for that reason, because I don't want
bad language.
Bad language, I know. Because I understand, you know, not everybody, people might have strong feelings about that. I don't. I mean, I do not. Like, we don't really care about that. I think it's bullshit. I think that people can, you know, I don't think it matters. I think what matters is what you're saying, not the words you're using necessarily. Like, it doesn't seem like a high priority for me. However, I want to be aware of, you know, parents who, I want as many people as possible to be able to enjoy it. So without getting sappy or maudlin, I want to sort of like have, you know, sort of like a sweetness and a gentleness, but hopefully still do funny work.
Have you gotten letters from people that have stayed with you?
Yes.
Anything that you can think of? Any specific stories?
Honestly, it's fine. If people have...
No, you know, I don't mean that. I mean like good letters. I mean like, have people written, you know, as they've integrated this into their schools or into their homes, like, do you get notes from people that are really heartening?
Yes, I get all kinds of letters, and I will say that they're mostly really positive. And I feel so removed from, you know, I guess the readership in a lot of ways, so that like when people do write me and they tell me, you know, this comic really helped me get through a tough time, it's just, humbled is not even the right word. It's just, I'm floored. It's like, I feel, I don't know, it's just amazing. And that's what makes me want to keep doing them, because I'm like, wow, this little thing, this idea that I had as someone, you know, it really helped someone. Well, then I have to do more. I have to keep doing these, and I have to keep doing them right and being really careful about what I'm saying and be willing to apologize if I say something wrong, you know, just learn from, like, basically.
Yeah, it strikes me as the first part of our conversation about sort of how to find optimism during this time, you're also in relation to your readers, your lookers on.
Because of
the internet, because of Tumblr, you know, it's not like you're doing this in a void and hoping it resonates with somebody in a year when it gets published. I mean, you're really interacting.
Yes, especially, you know, with stuff that I am posting online right away. There are other things that, like, for instance, the comics I was talking about earlier, those won't be seen for like a year by anyone, because I'm not going to post them. So I have to keep that in mind too, because it's like, oh, am I, you know, talking about something that's relevant right now? Especially because all I want to do right now is talk about what's going on in the world, but that might not feel as immediate, you know, a year from now, or people might not want to talk about it a year from now. You know, they might, like, about quarantine or anything, they might just want to get away from it. And so,
the whole
who knows?
Idea, the whole like future casting thing for any of us who are trying to do stuff that won't come out for a year.
It's, I know.
Like, I'm honored to think of myself in the, you know, pantheon of people who are trying to think long term, but also like,
I know.
Okay, we have to take a quick break. We will be back, and we're going to talk about The Simpsons.
Yay!
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
And during the break, Liz was asking me where I got this tapestry that many of you have seen behind me, and the answer is society6.com, which is a great place for supporting artists.
It is.
And also for decorating your house.
Yes, they have great stuff. It's really user-friendly, like, as I'm so not tech-savvy.
But let me finish the plug, which is that...
Oh, sorry.
You can also find Liz's stuff there. So that means
let me finish talking about how I'm bad at computers.
I'm interrupting you talking about how bad you are. Yeah.
Society 6 has, I have a whole shop there. I try to keep it up. I haven't been as good about keeping it up lately, but I do. If there's like, I will say people will email me and be like, oh, I saw this comic and I really want it on a shirt or I really want it on a print. And I almost always will just put it up that day so that people can. So if you see something you like and it's not up there, then just email me. So in my emails.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
what a cool service. Well, but I also want to talk for a second because there's a thread of humility in everything that you do and talk about. And I wonder if that's something you're aware of and sort of deliberate about. Like I'm thinking about the fact that you call it the little book, right? The little book of Liz. And that when you go to your Tumblr, it says I can draw and then in parentheses, sort of.
Oh my gosh. No, I've never really thought about that before, but you're totally right. Like, and I think it's half intentional. It's just not the sort of person I am. I'm just not really like, I don't know. I feel even weird trying to talk about it right now.
I know.
Like,
it's just not putting you on the spot.
It's just not in my nature. But on the other hand, I will be honest. I think a lot of it is also just me being like, oh, I'm just kind of not embarrassed, but like, just sort of like, why is my work so popular? I know a lot of artists that are a lot better than me. I know a lot of artists who are doing amazing. So it's sort of like, I'm not proud of that, is that I'm sort of just saying like, oh, it's, you know, it's not a big deal. And I'm trying to get better at being proud of myself and owning what I'm saying and owning my work because, you know, a lot of it, I guess what I'm trying to say is the other half of it is just kind of my own shit. Just like me being just sort of not owning and being proud of what I've done. I'm getting better at it. But for a long time, I think because I didn't, you know, I went to animation school or I attempted to go to animation school, but I didn't get in.
And this was my next question. Segue for me. Thank you.
And then on The Simpsons, I actually like had applied for a couple jobs moving up here and there, like, you know, storyboard artist or jobs that were above what I was doing. And I didn't get those. Hmm. And so I think for a long time, I went from like sort of being just the artist who's scraping by. I mean, and I say that being fully aware that I was working on The Simpsons, which I am super grateful for. But I also just had sort of this feeling of like, I'm not quite good enough to be here. I don't quite belong. I'm on the chopping block any day. Now they're going to realize, you know, like the imposter syndrome that a lot of people feel. And so I went from that to doing really well within a couple of years. And so I think it's half humility and half just me sort of not really accepting that I'm any good, to be honest. Like just like, I'm like,
it's like
oh, yeah.
You're in the process of catching up to yourself.
I'm working on that. I'm trying to get, because I, you know, it's kind of, it's a waste of time in a way. I mean, it's just, you know, that's not important. What's important is how people are responding to it and how people receive it and how it's making them feel, and worrying about whether or not it's any good on my behalf, I think is sort of, I personally feel like it's kind of a waste of time. It's like, just keep doing the work and get better and be proud of yourself.
There's this famous Marianne Williamson quote that Nelson Mandela quoted in a speech. So it's sometimes attributed to either one of them, but about our habits of playing small and how that doesn't help anybody.
Mm.
But I mean, something that comes up on this podcast too, because it's about how we use our voices and how we navigate spaces that don't necessarily seem like they're made for us, is there are reasons that we play small that serve us.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, especially if you're a woman, especially if you're from any sort of a marginalized group, you know, we've picked up the memo that people would like us to play small and be really unintimidating. And there's something about, you know,
yeah,
I can draw sort of, that's like, don't worry. I'm not too big for my britches, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, yeah, again, I think it's just, I think it's a combination of that and just wanting people to sort of like, I guess, take me out of the equation and just sort of, because I also like purposefully don't have a huge social media presence personally. Like mm-hmm. I have a following and I post a lot of like work, and right now I'm posting a lot of other people's work so that people can see it. But when it comes to like me personally, I am not interested in really letting people in, partially because I'm a private person, and also because it just doesn't seem like it's necessary. Like that's not the message I want to give. I would rather just people see my work. So I think it's also in part that it's like, I'm not as important in this, you know, situation, but I am also very aware of the fact that I need to be sort of more proud of my work. And
I wonder if you're thinking about the proud of your work, you know, mission in relation also to having a daughter.
That, you know, that's actually a good point. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think it was literally like within the same month of not getting into this animation program, my mom also died, and she'd been sick for a few years. And she was always like, I mean, to say the very least, like my biggest cheerleader. And so I sort of, and I was 20. I was like 21 and a half when she passed away. But so I had to, after she died, it was like, I had to sort of find in within myself all that love and pride that she had for me. And so it was like this really, you know, big life altering thing where it's like, I sort of, you know, I lost her and I was rejected basically in this way that was the biggest way I'd ever been rejected at that point in my life, and told that I wasn't going to be good enough to do what I thought I was going to do from the moment I could hold a pencil basically. So I think it's just taken me like 15 years to finally get to the point where I'm like, you are really good and you are a good person and like you should be proud of what you're doing. I mean, it was hard for me to even say that right now, but I'm getting there. But I think that really has a lot to do with it. So I like lost this person right on the time someone told me no. And it was just finding my footing ever since, I guess.
That's a lot.
It's
Thank
a lot,
you for
yeah.
telling that story. And then connected to having your own kid.
And
do
then,
you feel like
exactly.
Sort of,
you're right. Yeah. And so now I have Marlo, who is six, and she's actually named, my mom was Mary Lou. And so we sort of took the Y and the U and called her Marlo after my mom. But she's, you know, she's so proud of me and she loves my comics, and she'll like, it's really sweet. Oh. She'll just like, yeah, she'll like read my calendars. Like we have a split level house. So we actually, I'm explaining why we have a baby monitor still for almost 7 year old, but we can't hear her when we're all the way downstairs. And so we'll be watching TV after she's gone to bed, and she'll be like, Mom, in this comic, what? And she'll ask questions about, and like, you know, she'll either tell me she likes it, or she'll ask me why, like how it was a joke, or ask me to, but she's really, really interested in them now in a way that's really helped me sort of like focus back on like, oh, you know, this is something to be proud of. And now it's actually become apparent to me that other kids are going to be doing that too. And it's just put more of a fire under me, because I'm like, I want more, you know. The fact that children are enjoying them has sort of shifted my focus from like, let me sort of make something that adults only would like, to like, oh, maybe this is what I'm trying to say here. Maybe I'm trying to like create jokes that parents and kids can enjoy. And so
Well, and also something that you just said in there is so real about that I'm experiencing with my 5-year-old, which is like, not only does he find things funny, but slash or. He's also hearing us find things funny and trying to understand the mechanics of a
joke. Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly right. It's wild. It's really interesting. And it's definitely, yeah, she's really inspired me to do a lot more. And it's been a definitely like a growing and learning process.
Can you help us, for anybody who doesn't know what happens in the animation world at all, what did it mean to work on The Simpsons? You referenced like there being different levels of jobs, but what did going to work every day entail and feel like?
Well, so my job on The Simpsons was what was called a character layout artist. And The Simpsons is actually run pretty differently from, I think, the studio, the way that the artist produced is really different from a lot of other studios. They always have kind of just done things their own way. But my job in particular was basically an animator of key poses. And what that means is I would, and I'm going to date myself because this was a long time ago, but I would get an audio cassette tape where the voice actors had recorded their voices, and I would get the storyboard where a storyboard artist had taken the script and sort of planned out each shot and figured out, you know, okay, well, in this scene, it starts in the living room. So here's an establishing shot of the house, and then here's the inside of the living room, and here's Homer, a close-up of Homer walking in. So then I would take each scene and I would listen to the audio and add basically the acting. So the layout artist's job was sort of to be an actor. So I would actually like kind of come up with the poses. And so let's say if there was a scene that had, you know, like Homer is sitting on the couch and then he stands up and says woohoo and then walks out, I would do the first pose of him sitting on the couch. I would do what's called an antic where he's like kind of about to jump up. And then I would do a pose where his arms are up and a pose where his arms are down. So basically it's like a blueprint so that the in-between artists, because those then get shipped to a studio in Korea, then they will fill in sort of the gaps. Mm. And I want to take this moment to say that the artists that work in the studio in Korea that do the in-between are incredible, incredible artists. They're all so, so good. So that was essentially it. And so it was a creative job in a way, because again, it was and you're working with a director. So an animation director is sort of like helping guide you, like, you know, here's my pitch for the acting. And they might say like, well, this is a little too cartoonish. We need it to be a bit more sitcom-y. And how about you have Homer do this rather than this, in a nutshell?
But so what would be an example of something that was too broad?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I can't think of a specific example, but I'll say that like part of the reason I got the job, one of the things that helped me get the job is I had watched the show so much and I really understood the subtlety of the acting, because, you know, people might apply who are coming from, you know, Disney feature or something, and they are just unbelievable animators, but they might not, if they've never watched the show, they might not understand, well, Homer isn't going to do like some zany, cartoony, like goofy, crazy acting. He's going to do more of the acting you would see on a TV show, like a live action TV show. Mm-hmm. Now, that was more true, you know, a long time ago when I was working. At this point, I think everyone's seen The Simpsons, so everyone knows what to expect, sort of. But that was sort of it. And so my first day, when I started there, I had actually gotten the rejection from the animation program. And then I actually had emailed a friend of mine who was working at The Simpsons at the time. He's kind of was a mentor of mine, a family friend. And I told him how sad I was. And, you know, I didn't.
And just to be clear, this is, you were in undergrad.
Yeah, so I was working towards a BFA in animation and illustration at San Jose State, and I had taken pretty much every class I could take before getting into the program, and I had applied for the program, and it was a hard year. I might not have been ready for the program. I don't know. I had taken a lot of time off because my mom was sick, and so it was like my head was in the clouds, and it was a tough time, and I wasn't really focused. But after I didn't get in, I knew I wasn't going to be able to work on, you know, my major for a year, because you couldn't reapply again until the next year. And so that's when my friend Brad Abelson, who was working at The Simpsons at the time, told me, you know, if you apply for the job and you're even like, if you take this test, this drawing test, basically, and you're even remotely good, I will help you and I will tell you what needs to get done and I will hand it in. But if you're not quite there yet, I'll be honest with you. And so I did it. I sent it to him. He was like, you can't animate. Well, he didn't say this. I shouldn't say that. He said this. He basically said, like, you can draw well enough, and here are the fixes that you need to do. And once you do these fixes, I will hand it in for you. The can't animate, that's me saying, because I knew I couldn't animate. I'd never animated before in my life. He didn't say that, but I knew I couldn't. Because illustrating and animating are two really different things, because animating is making an object move and illustrating is just drawing. And so I could draw, but I couldn't animate.
Well, how interesting also that what you're eventually doing with your...
Yeah, as illustrate, and you know, I struggle, one of the reasons I struggled at The Simpsons is because I'm not really good at animating. I draw really clean and really stiff, and and animators don't draw that way. Animators draw loose and flowy drawings, and it's just not the way I draw.
Well, also how perfect that you were doing the key art, which is the, you know, the, what's like photo, what's the word I'm looking for? The snapshot of every moment, but not the animating in between.
Well, and there's a place for everyone. You know, there are people there at the studio who were known for, oh, give this scene to so-and-so because, you know, she's really good at animating and she'll do like a really beautiful fluid drawing. She'll make this, she'll give the itchy and scratchy stuff to so-and-so because she's going to make like a really, really cool, fun animated scene. Give this scene, this heartfelt scene between Homer and Maggie to Liz because Liz is good at doing really subtle, like nuanced acting. And that's what I realized eventually that I was good at. And it sort of translated then into my comics because that's sort of what I'm doing in my comics now is sort of like very subtle stuff. But everyone had their own sort of thing that they were good at. And there are all different kinds of artists there and everyone was sort of like kind of doing their thing. It's interesting too, because back when stuff was on paper and it would get handed off to different people, I could see after being there a long enough time, I could see a drawing and know exactly who did it in the studio.
Wow.
Because I just was so used to seeing everyone's stuff.
Wow. that completely made me lose my train of thought of where I was going to go.
I went all over the place with that. I'm sorry.
No, actually this is a conversation. It's sort of the point. It also brings us back to that initial cartoon that we were talking about with the snake and the help, because there is something about the subtlety of these moments that you capture that is about what's sort of hidden underneath rather than like what's being performed.
Yeah. I try really hard to not hit you over the head with whatever I'm trying to say. And I guess that is sort of lends itself to, if I'm trying to appeal to as many people as possible, then it has to be sort of broad and it can't be too like specific. So I sort of try to like, I don't know, open up, I guess, the idea a bit, but...
But what's broad, I mean, it's interesting because what's broad is the universal human experience, but it's funny because the universal human experiences we're talking about are those moments when we're actually not being broad, you know? Where
we're not
telegraphing, I have a huge emotion right now, but rather covering, which is what so much of... human interactions is, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Oh, I have something really weird and little going on here when it's really like, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point. That's true.
I guess one other question, because it feels like it's relevant for this podcast, is I don't know anything about the animation world in terms of gender parity. Was there anything that felt like there was sort of a proving yourself element to your experience that wasn't just because you were new to it?
Yes, there was. I think a lot of it has gotten better since I left the studio, but absolutely.
I was holding it back, actually.
You know, I was 22 when I started. I was 23, sorry, when I started there. Britney Spears was the top of the charts. Low-rise jeans were, you know, what was hot and half. I was 23 and dressing like a 23-year-old woman and, you know, walked into that place and I won't say everyone, but a lot of people, you know, started spreading rumors about how I got the job and why I was there. And that, you know, coupled with the fact that I was already feeling like I didn't belong because I, you know, had just gotten rejected from this animation program, I had to prove to myself and everybody else that I belonged there. It was much harder to prove to myself. Not to excuse the behavior, but it was a boys' club and it had been for a long time. There weren't a lot of women there. And the women who were working there, you know, they all kind of gave me a heads up and told me how it was. And like, this is, you know, this is the way it is. And I will say since then that a lot of that has disappeared. I think when I started, it was me and another girl were sharing a cubicle. I think there was maybe two other female director or ADs and then a couple other women in the studio, but it was mostly men. And not everyone was like this, but a lot of them were saying that I was there because... not because of my work. So
yeah,
I had to get over that. And I worked really hard. I mean, I would have worked hard anyway. There was an assistant director who worked there who passed away. His name was James O'Brien. He was the first assistant director I worked with. And I give him so much credit for, he basically told, and this is aside from gender and who I was and what I looked like and all of that, he basically said, you know, you're new and I'm not saying you're not good enough to be here, but you need to prove that you belong here because a lot of people want this job. And so you're going to have to work really hard and people are going to have to see you working really hard. And so I did. And he was right. And so that was aside from the rumors and aside from everything else, but I kind of took that as like, you know, all right, you think that I don't belong here and this is why I'm here. Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to show you why I am here. And I did. So
that's great too, because, you know, getting feedback like that can also be paralyzing. I mean, it can either make you rise to the occasion or it can, you know, yeah, make you feel like, how do I be an artist
exactly.
in that environment?
And I was already very vulnerable at that time. So yeah, it was tough, but you know, figured it out. So.
And I guess the final question then that leads to is, how did you start the Tumblr and what is your relationship between sort of working for somebody versus working for yourself?
So the Tumblr—
creatively speaking, you know?
Yeah. So the Tumblr was actually an effort of sort of an exercise in accountability because I was doing, you know, more and more of my own stuff sort of just with friends. Like we were playing, it actually started with, because I hadn't really drawn my own stuff for a few years after having started on The Simpsons because I was so focused on just drawing The Simpsons. But then I ended up playing a Dungeons and Dragons game with like a group of friends. And so I would, because I'm really cool. And so I...
Obviously.
I would end up like illustrating each night. Like I would draw like what was happening and create little like funny vignettes of like different scenes. And so my husband, Colin, who was my boyfriend at the time, you know, he sort of encouraged me like, because he has seen my sort of imposter syndrome in action. He's like, you know, you're good. You should post, put out, do more drawings and then put out what you're doing and just let other people see it.
Well, interestingly also, he's a man in animation.
Yes.
So it's almost like he was sort of lending you his confidence.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And he and I actually started very similarly where we were both really young. We both hadn't gone to, he was younger than me. I think he was like 19 when he started on The Simpsons and he hadn't gone to college. And so, but you're right. It was sort of like, I am saying you should do this and I'm giving you the confidence, you know, and I trust him and his judgment. And I needed a little push. And then I just started for myself at that time. And I'm grateful, and I'm just pushing myself all along the way. So,
well, and also to tie it in with what you said about your mom, like it seems like the journey was to become your own cheerleader.
Definitely, and yeah, I've definitely gotten better at that.
That's real for all of us.
Yeah,
you know? That's real. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break and find out who you brought in for us to okay. listen to.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you.
24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Okay, so we're back. Liz, tell us who you brought in.
Oh, I brought in Lizzo. I actually have a cardboard cutout of her behind me. I should just like take it down and bring it and hold it up so you can see her.
Did you go to her concert when she was in LA?
Yes, I did.
I had a feeling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely did. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Lizzo fan. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who is everyone? I mean, everyone loves her. She's wonderful, but she's probably like, I don't remember ever being so like excited to see someone live in concert. Cause she's great. She's a great singer. She's beautiful. She's a force. She's amazing to watch. Like, I don't know. It was such a great feeling. I remember going to that concert and I think it was like in October.
Let's take a moment for being in the same room with other humans.
I know it seems so far. It's funny. Cause it's like, that seems so far away. I'm trying to like search my brain for that memory. But it was such a great, I mean, just looking around the audience and seeing so many different looking people. Everyone looked so comfortable and so happy. And the room just felt and looked like love in a way that I don't think I'd ever seen or felt before. And it was just such a great feeling. And to be honest, I'm struggling to sort of describe it now because it seems so far away now because we're in such a difficult time right now, but that was, it's such a great memory of just like everyone in one place, just embodying this beauty and this spirit that was just so, I don't know, it was very moving.
Let's take a quick listen to her.
Okay.
thank you for that.
You know, you grow up, you go to school for a little bit and they teach you about one America and then you learn that there's another America. And I've been heartbroken by it for most of my life. This is a outright slow genocide since 1860s. Seeing the activism that happened is incredible to me. Seeing white allies, privileged allies, is even more incredible. That is the only way the system breaks.
I pulled up from her IGTV because, one of the things that is so meaningful about how she communicates is that it just feels very raw and very, I mean, you know, the word authentic comes to mind. She's not wearing any makeup. She's holding the camera really close to mm-hmm. her. She's not following any of, you know, the sort of Hollywood guidelines on how to feminize yourself, mm-hmm. how to look beautiful, because it's just not about that. And because obviously, as we well know, she's on, a self-love crusade mm-hmm. and that would feel really inauthentic, I think. But, you know, along with the message, the end result when we're watching is such a deep sense of candor.
Absolutely.
Truth.
It's tough with social media because, you know, like, especially for someone like me who's, I'm so private, and just to see her sort of speak openly and also, you know, like about mental health and like how she's feeling and like just being mm-hmm. open with her audience, knowing full well that not everyone is going to respond to her, you know, nicely, because that's just the internet, you know, that's just the way it goes. I really appreciate that. And I think it's helping so many people. And I think it's helping so many people to see this clearly just beautiful woman who, you know, doesn't maybe necessarily look like what we were told, you know, to strive to look like for so many years.
It's not what the beauty industry would like us to believe.
No, exactly. Sure. And it's such a charade. Like, none of that makes it doesn't even matter. Like, I remember showing my daughter, you know, like everyone else really loves her music. And she asked me once, she's like, can I see a picture of her? I've never seen her. And I was like, oh, sure. And I showed her a picture of her and she was, I don't remember what picture it was, but she's just like, it's a full body picture. She's wearing like a red dress and she looks, you know, gorgeous. And my daughter was like, Mommy, she's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, yes, she is. I agree. She's a beautiful woman. And it's just nice that like I'm so thrilled that, you know, my daughter has someone like that to look up to as far as like physical beauty, inner beauty, talent, ambition. Like, it's just she's just a very, very powerful woman.
I want to pull out two things also from what you just said that I think is helpful for everybody to think about too in terms of their own, you know, Lizzo within. Oh God, if only. One, this gamble of being vulnerable and having haters, but being vulnerable anyway, mm-hmm. and trusting that the gamble part of it is trusting that will you'll connect with more people by being real rather than fewer. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is in this time when we feel really leaderless, she is one of the leaders of our time.
Yeah.
And what it is to look into a lens and say something that's true with no frills and provide a space for people to, you know, like sit with that truth.
Yes.
To feel the celebration of it and to feel the horror of it and to feel, you know, that there's work to be done is a style of leadership that is not what we were taught about in school.
Yeah, that's really true. That's a really good point. And we really need, we need as many people like that right now as possible, you know?
Yeah. And to tie back to you, my stunning guest, you know, you've talked about a number of times you've mentioned your privateness and how you're not using social media in that way, you know, and how much you're sharing of your heart through your art, like thinking about yourself as a leader in that way, you know? I mean, obviously leader with a lowercase L, right? I'm just on this kick for all of us to think about the ways in our life that we can lead. Not that there's anything wrong with following great leaders too. I'm not saying that this is like a one size fits all. If we think of ourselves as a leader, we're never followers. I don't mean that at all, but I mean, you know, if we can define leadership broadly enough that what we're saying is that we will stand up for ourselves and we will stand up for people.
Yeah.
I think it's such a better way to think about, then there's like fewer steps for us to go from that sort of paradigm shift mm-hmm. in our mind into, oh, now I actually will take the mic when somebody asks me to say something that matters.
Yeah, I think, you know, people want to be seen and people want to be heard. And if people aren't being seen and people aren't being heard, people get frustrated and rightfully so. And so anything we can do to sort of like make people feel like they're being acknowledged and their pain is being acknowledged and what they're feeling is real is a small step in the right direction.
As a leader, you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's something that we can do. That is another way of defining leadership too.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And also, you know, a sort of stereotypically more feminine, democratized version of
right.
leadership, right? Because there is this sort of hierarchical sense of like, follow me,
exactly.
I know what's best versus this sort of like consensus building.
Yeah.
Sense of I see you. And your contribution, let's celebrate everybody's contributions and then some truth will emerge out of that, some plan.
Yeah, and let's not just bury what you might feel sad or angry or frustrated about. Let's not just like push that aside. That is...
Yeah, let's see what shape the snake
exactly.
is in.
Exactly.
Liz, thank you so much for joining me for
thank
this
you so much for having me today.
Especially as a private person, I appreciate you opening up to us.
Well, thank you. Yes, it was a pleasure to be here.
Yay. Thank you to Liz for talking to us today. You can find out more about her in the show notes or on our website, permissiontospeakpod.com. Every Thursday now, I am doing an IG Live at 11 a.m. Pacific at Permission to Speak Pod on Instagram. So check out my stories and continue to send me DMs, voice memos, messages at the Instagram, at the website. We'll do a mailbag episode coming up, and I would love to know what's going on with your voice, what speaking up feels like, how you need help, where you're stuck. Thanks to Sophie Lichterman and the team at iHeartRadio, my family and cohort, and all of you. We are recording this podcast at various locations around Los Angeles on land that is the historic gathering place for the Tongva Indigenous tribe, and you can visit usdac.us to learn more about honoring native land. Permission to Speak is a production of iHeartRadio and Double Vision, executive produced by Catherine Burt Canton and Mark Canton. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more.
more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.